This is an interview with Mrs. Gail L. Tubbs, held at her home, Bishop, Texas, on July 20th, 1973. Mrs. Tubbs has been a prominent citizen of Bishop, Texas, since 1913. She was a newspaper writer for the Bishop News for many years. Therefore, she knows many of the events that took place in Bishop, Texas. Let's hear from Mrs. Tubbs on the early history of Bishop, Texas. How was it that you came to Bishop, Texas?
Republic of Texas and repackaged in for the state of Texas by Governor Sal Ross in 1887. It described it deeds as part of the San Federico deed. And it changed hands quite rather often. In 1845, it was sold to William H. Lee for $500 cash and the value of a brick house in Mount Morris. It was often in litigation with the heirs of the original owners. And this bishop, Robert and Jeremiah Driscoll, came in possession of it in 1885. The tale was told that the owners owed the Driscolls $30,000, and they offered them cash on 30,000 acres of land, and the Driscolls took the land. People said those Driscoll boys were crazy. That land wasn't worth 10 cents an acre. And the first order lease on record down here was made March 19, 1901. With J. M. Guffey, or a company of Beaumont. It was a 10-year lease for $200 a year. It was later annulled because it didn't do anything valuable. And the railroad era came in shortly after that. 1903, Colonel Uriah Locke broke the trail with a walking bullboard plow behind the span of Ray Mills for the first mile of the right-of-way from St. Louis Brownsville, New Mexico. And by January 1904, the right-of-way was about the back of the Driscoll pasture. Rails and ties were pushed over with black mud. J.N. Daddy Shaw bossed the Ridge Carpenter crew building the span across Corinth Creek down here on our border. Daddy Shaw, who later lived in Kingsville until his death, was a great man with thick shoulders, who after two or three violent digs at his tobacco plug could pick up a 650-pound rail in his huge hands. When the railroad was put through, they were required to lay out town sites because it was for the purpose of settling, not for settlement. So by the time the first train was through on July 4, 1904, the Driscoll Ranch had thrown up loading pins and chutes 700 yards north of the creek at the siding that they called Junior for Mrs. Robert Driscoll Sr., who had died in London in 1899. And the town site of Junior was laid out in 1906 by the Driscoll Town and Improvement Company. But the Driscoll Ranch hands were about the only residents. She came out here and cooked for the hands that were working doing the grubbing. And they described this country as having, this whole area, as having waist-high grass and running whiskey, low brush. There weren't any trees except along the Corinth Creek. Incidentally, wish we had some authentic material on Corinth Creek, because the tale is told that it was named from some old Corinthians, am I pronouncing it correctly, that were sunk in the mud about a mile east of town. And Mr. Sam Raglan said that they were part of a skirmish during the Card War. The war between the Teamsters and the Mexican carters, who, because the Teamsters could carry a bit more in their wagons than the cart men could in theirs, so they were fighting for their business.
These were the green card workers? These are the green card workers from Mexico?
No, they were the men who were hauling the the produce or anything, material from Brownsville to San Antonio usually.
Oh, I see.
And there was quite a bit of Texas history about the Cotton War. It went on for several years during 1850s. Most of the fights were up around Goliad, but it is said that there was one fight right down here at this creek, and several of the carts were bogged down and sunk. They evidently got the worst of it. And I was told, I never did get down that far to see, that when the creek bed was dry, you could see the remains of those heavy wooden wheels, those big carts, there even after Bishop was started for some time. But we can't get enough authentic material on it for a marker or anything. Early in 1910, S.D. Bishop was a young insurance agent at the Southern Plain, making his steps on the train between the Corpus Christi and Brownsville. He liked this area, so he made up his mind to build a town here. He began to negotiate with some of the ranch, the Wild Ranch, I think, over towards the west, and some of the Driscoll property. Of course, he had to have the town side of Julia for his town, maybe, because it was the outlet to the railroad, and it was designated as a town site. So the rather fast financing took place about then, because Oasis County records record that a deal was filed in April of 1910, by Charles H. Plato Jr., who had bought this area, the Julia town site, for $42,460. By the time Mr. Bishop got around to it, the deed that was filed for him indicates that he bought the property of Julia town site from Charles H. Plato Jr. for $60,506. The deed provided that the land that conveyed shall not be sold or used for pasture purposes, but shall be sold only in town lots, town site purposes, and in farm tracts for homesteads and farms. So, Bishop immediately then got to work clearing the town site and laying out the farmland. He laid out the farmland in the west section, particularly in mile squares, sections by section, with roads running between them. And he got two larger brush-rutted plows that were built for Tom Morazzi, Moravian blacksmith in Grobstown. And these had huge wheels. Let's see, I have a description of that. Round, here we go. They were pulled by big steam tractors. They consisted of staggered 14 to 14 hard of pine inch beams running parallel with the road and holding three 32-inch plow shares. Three wheels on top of the plow regulated the depth of the shares, and two rods projected from each share caught the brush and laid on top of the ground. Each share could turn the 30-inch swath of ground, and the plows would break about 10 acres a day if everything went well. The hard pine beams he had to order from San Antonio, and the plows were mounted on wooden wheels, 12 inches wide and 30 inches in diameter. Iron wheels collapsed under the strain. When the rest was making the plows, he sold the first one to sell to Mr. Bishop for the three bottom plows. They cost $67. And the prime contractors got $10 an acre for rubbing the plow. The engineer driving the string tractor got $2.50 a day. The mesquite was burned for fuel. And later, they brought in coal from Mexico. at a later time, this person had three of the 16 metal valves, and the valve hands started their the first trailer house, as we had seen. They built them a small frame house on skids and loaded from section to section behind that valve, so they always had a place to live. They didn't come into town except on Saturday. Then they were pretty drastic. They made a run for the bottle shop, which had a bathing facility, and get cleaned up, and were very nice looking young men that's together. They were. This is laid out in town on a large pine table that's still down in the county building. I think, I guess it was about 60 square. With plenty of room, and he zoned the area. That's common practice for any subdivision today, but it was a little new then. And laid out town lots and the residential district and business district, and zoned the industrial area along the railroad track. And by that time, the railroad had gotten around to calling the town looking for one of the members of that board, a member of the famous Brookings family. Mr. Bishop immediately started efforts to get the name changed to Bishop. And finally, did succeed in doing so in 1912. He was made official in January 1912. But, and the railroad came along and reluctantly painted the name Brookings out, but they didn't use very heavy coat of paint, because as late as 1913, we could see the BR and the GS of Brookings showing on each side of the ISHOP shoulder on both sides of the depot. Mr. Bishop brought his prospects over for his prospective buyers. Over from Corpus Christi in a moon buggy. I told you before, I think it was made by the same company that made the moon wagon. It was good wheel, solid tire, old brush wagon with a chain drive and motor underneath. It was handled by a lever rather than a steering wheel. Later he bought a serve and some bay horses and a spring wagon and fixed a little stable for them. He zoned the farmland, brought in a good many prospectors from Central Texas. At that time, the valley was starting development, but they were angling for people from the north and then west. Mr. Bishop wanted to be right sure that his farmers made a success of things, so he met up with the black man farms of Central Texas. And the cool young couples that wanted to move away from where they'd have called the family farm. And on June 9th, 1910, the first family arrived in Bishop. They finished the first house in the five-room brown bungalow. And Dan W. Taylor, the head of Mr. Bishop's sales force, bought his wife and five children. In this brown bungalow. The little house is still in the Bishop. It has been moved from the first location, which is up where the highway is now. And a man named O'Brien moved the building in from Kingsville and opened up the first business here. Charlie Jones operated the commissary for Mr. Bishop and got his material or his stock in a light grade. Now, in Pinfield, he drove a light gray with a top cover back and forth, and he brought the mail that had come in for those. The trains didn't even stop here at that time. And you have to get some of us to tell the tale about how he and Charlie made up the first post office when they got tired of emptying people's letters out on the counter and letting them come and grab. And people who didn't bring a good stock of groceries or canned food or something with them. At the 15th row, that's close to that. Mr. J.B. Buss, first farmer. He came in August 1910, and his son, Del Buss, came in October. The whole family moved down after their house had been finished in November. And Gus Felder bought one of the, started one of the first farms on the east side. He bought his stock, mules, other stock, and household goods down in Everman, an Everman car. And well, they had hay for them, which proved to be pretty fortunate because they couldn't get enough material to build a house, so they stacked the hay, bale on bale, for a two-room house covered in the wagon sheets. And then they lived during November and December 1910. They had a rather cool house. The Teedy family came early too and settled on a farm out east of town. While they were grubbing, having the land grubbed and plowed, they slept in the wagon beds. They took off the runners, used the runners to go to Kingsville, the whole lumber, built a barn first and lived in it. And the Hardy family said they brought cured meat, dried fruit for the flour sacks full, and a barrel of homemade sort of stuff. They just took one of the farms out west of town, and they had to haul water from the artesian well down in the farm. And they hauled it on a two-wheel cart full of our mules. Mr. Bishop officially opened the town on May the 30th, 1910. He had laid out the put down about 5 miles of sidewall and had laid out all the lots and had a little building starting. But and for his opening, he had quite a celebration. He put up a tent on the little triangle that's down in the, between the business section and the highway today. And he hired a 12-piece band from Kingsville Play. Well, the boys of Kingsville couldn't round up 12 musicians. So two of the prominent citizens of present day Kingsville told me that they came up with that band and they couldn't play a note, but they plugged their horns and came on and did it anyway. And they got paid for it too. And one of the first things they did was Bishop did was put in an electric light system. It was rather crude, but and the water plant was a good one. And they had a high tall water tower about where the high school is on top of the park drop where the high school is now. And they had Bishop spelled out in huge 3-foot feathers around that water tank. People going through on the ground at night. Something called the railroad. At night, we'd see the old prairie lit up out here, and Bishop in the bright letters, and wondered if it wasn't old town. My husband came here in January 1912. They got off the train after dark, looked out, and they thought it was a big place. Next morning, they got up, there were 6 houses in town. And the depot that had been used for section hands cleared out. And town lots sold rather fast. Business lots sold for $200 a month. Residential lots, 50 by 165 feet. He made it that deep because they had to have a place to keep your cow and your horse and so forth. They sold for $100 a month. Unimproved land went for $30 an acre. That would have been plowed for $60 a month. He also laid out a 40-acre city park down along the creek, and two artesian wells were brought in. One of them fed the swimming pool, built a bathhouse, and he had a landscape. By 1913, he had a landscape architect that really kept that park in nice condition. They built the famous stand. It was sent for the Front Fisher Bank by that time. And we had concerts down there on Hotel Porch every Saturday night. That was part of the city entertainment. About 90% of the homeseekers that he wrote in were experienced farmers in Black Land, Central Texas. From 1911 and 12, immigrant cars were listed at the rate of 75 to 100 a month. And one of the principal farms had a, I found some right good notes on it, the Garden Farm, which is just south of town. And it was brought under contract to be grubbed, bowed, disc, harrowed, and placed in state ready for cultivation. 16,000 foot to work. One large gasoline engine followed steam plows with long string discs and harrows. 20 new teams were kept busy supplying water and oil to the engines and men. And there were 160 men working on the place at the same time.